Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Election Day, y'all. I might have a segment on that tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be plenty of articles for me to dig into and learn much more about what's happening there, so I could give you some kind of breakdown or opinion on it tomorrow. I don't have one right now, but I dislike Harper, so I'll just leave it at that. But I love your healthcare system, Canada. Keep doing what you do. I can tell you, if you live in Canada and you want to hear a horror story about healthcare, I could just tell you how the last time I went for a physical, they charged me $885. I kid you not. And I have coverage. I'm fucking covered, and they charged me $885. You ready for the reason why? Blood work. It was a regular, whatever it is, like an in-depth checkup, also known as a fucking checkup. Like, we checked your blood and stuff, so $885. That's what we're dealing with here. Ever go in that direction. All right, I got a great show for you guys today. We got Donald Trump is parading around promoting socialist policies, as he says he's, not one. Speaking of socialism, Bernie Sanders went on Bill Maher's show, and they got into detail on socialism, and I'm going to tell you, so Bernie kind of laid out how he wants to explain to the American people what a democratic socialist is, and Bill Maher laid out the way that he thinks the argument should be made. I'm going to tell you guys who I think is more right and why that's important. And then also, much later on in the show, we have Jeb Bush pretending like his brother didn't oversee any terrorist attacks or anything, and he's not to blame for any of them. And we have a creationist heading a board of education or a state education commission in Maine, which means Maine is going downhill fast. And we have a lot more stuff. So let's go ahead and get started here. And we'll do that with Donald Trump, but I also can't wait to get to the Bernie Sanders stories because we have some on the polls that are just such an important update to Friday's show. But all right, let's do this. One of the things Donald Trump has been saying, which we've given him credit for, is that the election system in America is corrupt and the lobbyists run the place. And he says that he wouldn't listen to them and he wouldn't take big money. Well, it turns out that all of that is a farce. Now, this is one of the biggest problems with Donald Trump is that even when he says decent things on occasion, you never know if you can believe him because it's Donald fucking Trump. Well, now we know for sure that at least when it comes to corruption, it's all a farce. So Mediaite is reporting today, quote, Donald Trump's campaign manager told the Washington Post that they would sue if reporters wrote an unflattering story about the Republican candidate's ties to a super PAC. Trump has long portrayed himself as unable to be wooed by big corporate donors, since he himself is a billionaire, but a Post story Sunday pointed out that the Trump campaign does have ties to a super PAC that takes money from wealthy donors called the Make America Great Again PAC. When the Washington Post asked Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski for comment, he responded with the threat of legal action. Quote, he threatened to file a lawsuit if the Washington Post reported that Trump had given the group his blessing. Lewandowski also denied having any ties to anyone running the Make America Great Again PAC, but when the Post provided concrete evidence that he had ties to the PAC's consultant, Mike Cilletti, Lewandowski responded, "I know a lot of people," and hung up. So there's no question about it. Donald Trump is definitely taking corporate money, people's money, even though he's rich himself, for his super PAC, and they're involved in trying to get him elected. Now, clearly, the way it works under U.S. law, and it's not so clear, so I don't know why I said clearly, but super PACs are supposed to be totally separate from your campaign. And the idea is, well, there are some limits if people donate to your campaign, because that's corruption when people give money to a campaign. But as long as it's an outside spending group, a.k.a. a super PAC, well, then you should be able to give unlimited money, because in theory that's not connected to the campaign. So this is objective and independent, and they're not going to be, you know, colluding with the people in the campaign. Of course, across the board, all of these guys, to one extent or another, do collude with their super PACs who are working to try to get them elected. And now we have just hardcore evidence of it. And on top of that, he's even worse than a guy like Jeb Bush, because his people are threatening a lawsuit if a free press, allegedly free press, writes articles on facts about what's going on with this super PAC. Oh, that's beyond fucked up. Trump went from being better than other Republicans on the issue of money in politics to worse in one, article here, which lays it out for us. Even Jeb Bush, when he's called out with, "Hey man, it looks like you're still kind of colluding with your super PAC," at least he has the wherewithal to be like, he doesn't say anything to the media, and if anybody ever hints anything, it's kind of like a, come on, everybody does it. Now, they're breaking the law, no question about it. But Trump and his campaign, they're so fucking brazen that they're called out, and they're like, well, now I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue you, the Washington Post, for doing journalism and learning shit that can educate the public about what kind of a person we're dealing with this candidate. They're like, no, we're going to sue you if you write an unfavorable story about us. Guys, this is fucking scary. I mean, we're talking about a guy in Donald Trump who now has a decent chance to win the election. He's an out-and-out authoritarian, just out-and-out. And he's got that like, Gaddafi complex of, I'm above all rules, I'm above any kind of scrutiny, and even if you report on information about what I'm doing, well, I'll just sue you and try to shut you down. And when you have as much money as Donald Trump and you have the legal team that can fucking argue anything, people will just be cowered into silence. And that's the biggest thing to worry about, because we do live in a free country in terms of free speech with the First Amendment. So, of course, Trump would lose that case. But the idea is just make them spend a shitload of money going through the court process to prevent them from writing in the future negative stories about you and your campaign. But God, we can't sit by and let this shit happen. And all the stuff that we've mentioned to this point about Donald Trump and, oh, at least he's saying the right things in the debates about money and politics, just know that's all a farce. You shouldn't be surprised that Donald Trump is not really a very trustworthy person. All right, now, I don't know how many Trump stories I got today versus Bernie Sanders stories, but let me go to this next Trump story, because this one's also interesting. Donald Trump spoke about his health care plan on a radio show, and the conversation was better than you might expect.
I don't want to see people dying in the streets, Simon, and neither do you.
No.
And neither do great Republicans. I mean, the Republicans don't want people dying in the streets. There are going to be some people that aren't going to be able to have, they don't have any money. And we can make a deal with hospitals where the people that can't buy the plan, which will not be that much because everyone's going to want to be private. Everyone's going to want to buy these plans. But we can make a deal where we take care of people with hospitals. You know, we have so many hospitals in this country that are doing so poorly because of Obamacare and other reasons, but they're doing so poorly. But we can't have people dying in the streets, Simon. And right now, I mean, you're going to have a problem. You would have I mean, it would be a revolution.
Yeah.
We can't have people, because they have no money, that they don't have a clinic that they can at least go to get a pill to straighten themselves. You know, in many cases, it's not even like an operation. It's they need a pill or they need something. And I don't think we just can't have people dying in the streets. So we have hospitals that are doing no business. They're not doing well, and they're all over the place. It's way over-hospitalized. And we have people, and we pay some bills. And by the way, it'll be much less expensive than Obamacare, and the overall package will save a fortune for the country, and people will have a great plan, because most of them are going to go through the private companies. Does that make sense to you?
It does, and, you know, I mean, I want to point something out. I obviously grew up with socialized medicine, but here's the thing, the weird thing, is in this country, if you are sick and you go to the ER and you have no money, they have to treat you. That's the law.
Right.
We pay more per head of population on that kind of health care than Great Britain does per head of population on its National Health Service.
And that's right.
And yet the services we deliver to that segment of the market are way worse than the, quite frankly,
right,
appalling National Health Service for the majority of their population. It just needs sorting out business-wise. No one is suggesting that people should die because they can't afford to live. At least I'm not suggesting it.
Well, that's all I'm saying. And people say, oh, gee, what kind is it? Well, I'm just saying you can't, if a person has no money, you can't let the person die. You just can't let the person die on the street. You just can't let it happen. And, you know, I keep talking about the Republicans. They have heart. But some people would cry, oh, is this socialized medicine? I don't put a label on it. We have hospitals that can handle it easily and, frankly, inexpensively, because you have to, you know, you make a deal with these hospitals so they can't rip off the country.
So when he says that people shouldn't die in the streets when they're sick, that is a controversial position when it comes to Republican politicians and the Republican establishment. That's point number one. So credit to Donald Trump for not being the worst of the worst and incredibly immoral on this issue. That's why I led into this clip here by saying the conversation was better than you might think. But the second part of this is, Donald, do you know what you just described? One of the provisions of Obamacare. He's like, you know, Obamacare is the problem here. All this screwed up stuff is happening as a result of Obamacare. You know, what we need to do is take the poor people and, like, give them health care, yeah, funded by the government. That's what we should do. What do you think the Medicaid expansion is? That's one of the key provisions of Obamacare. And the problem is that, unfortunately, many red states and their governors have decided we're just not going to accept it. Now, originally in the bill, they had to accept it. But then when this portion went through the Supreme Court, they said, nope, the states have the option to opt into that or not opt into that. And now many red states say, we're not going to opt into it, even though the federal government pays 100% of the costs for 3 to 5 years. And then after that, the federal government picks up like 80% of the costs. They're still saying no simply because they don't like Obama. And understand that a lot of people are going to die as a result of this. We've seen the studies. I think Harvard did a study recently. We covered that on the show, and we gave you specific cases of people who died that wouldn't have died if they were able to get the Medicaid expansion, and they didn't accept it, again, because they dislike Obama. So Republican obstruction is leading to the deaths of many people. It's just a fact. And what Trump is saying here, he thinks it's like this revolutionary idea. He's like, you know, Obamacare is terrible. What we should do is replace it with Obamacare. And he goes on to say, well, you know, the difference is I want to keep a majority of the system private still. That's the difference. That's not the difference, because the majority of the system under Obamacare is still private. That's what the individual mandate portion is of the bill. Does he know nothing about what he's talking about? The whole idea is we're not going to have a single-payer system, but what we're going to do is mandate by law that people have to buy from private insurance companies if they fall in a certain income range. And then for all the people that don't go down that road, if you fall below a certain number in income, well, then you'll get Medicaid under the Medicaid expansion, but the governors had to accept it. A lot of Republican governors didn't accept it, and then that's where we are today. And his solution is, to replace Obamacare, we should, like, put into place Obamacare. We should make sure the poor people get the health care, pay for that with the government. And let's remember, that portion, which he's harping away on here, That's the portion that is socialist in Obamacare. The overall bill is not, because of what I said about the individual mandate and other provisions in the bill as well. But that aspect of it is socialism. He's like, you know, people tell me they're socialist. I tell them, nah, I don't want to put a label on it. You don't want to put a label on it because it is that, and you just don't want to be associated with that. But, and another segment later on, we'll get into this. It just is what it is in terms of, you might not know it, the American people might not know it, about a variety of different programs, but on certain issues, you indeed are socialist. If you like Social Security, you're socialist. If you like Medicaid or Medicare, you're socialist. You like having nice paved roads, you're socialist. You like the military, you're socialist. And the list goes on and on. So this is just a matter of ignorance in terms of terms. In terms of terms, that's a funny sentence. And you not understanding Obamacare. But hey, if that's the road you want to go down, that does make you more reasonable than a bunch of other Republicans. All right, next. Let's get into the Bernie Sanders poll situation. That sounded gross. Bernie Sanders poll. Any ladies out there have any experience with that? Curious. So we reported how Bernie Sanders won the Democratic debate in every single snap poll by a mile and a half directly after the debate. But also, Hillary won the scientific polling that came later. So the proper thing to say directly after the debate was, well, according to the numbers, granted unscientific polls, but they're worth something, Bernie won. And then later on, it also became a fair analysis after we got the scientific polling to say, well, Hillary won. But now we have an update on that story because it's actually much more complex, and there's some misleading stuff going on here. So here's John Iderola from TYT explaining.
Bernie Sanders was the winner, and that was buttressed with a number of online polls where Bernie was winning with overwhelming margins. And then you look at the mainstream news sites, the headlines, the newspaper headlines, all saying that Hillary Clinton had won. She'd leaned in a clean sweep, even on sites where they actually had the polls right next to it showing that she had not won. And we thought that there was some sort of weird cover-up or that they were projecting their mainstream preferences onto the people. And then this morning I woke up and I saw that there were multiple polls showing that the regular people thought Hillary Clinton had won by fairly large margins. And so I had to prepare myself to come in and admit defeat, admit that Cenk and I were wrong, there's no huge cover-up, and America feels the way that the broadcasters do. And that might still be the case, but JR looked into the methods of some of these polls, I looked into a couple more, and I'm not sure that that's actually what's going on. So we're going to look at some of these polls. First of all, if we can bring up this this graphic showing you NBC poll, Huffington Post poll, and Gravis Media, it's an independent marketing company. And you see their fairly large preference for Hillary Clinton. You know, something like 23 points in NBC, you've got 23 points in HuffPost, and similar in the graphs. Here's the problem, though. Let's bring up this next graphic. Now, this is not in the articles about those polls, but if you look at the actual published poll results, you see there that the number of people that they included that watched the debate live, that's 24% of all respondents, that those that did not watch the debate live but followed coverage of it in the news is 36% of all respondents. And those are the two categories they use when generating those charts that you just saw. 50% more people only are saying what they heard in the news, and that's what we were criticizing all this week.
That's incredible.
So do you understand what that means? After the debate, all of the non-scientific snap polls said Bernie won in a landslide. The mainstream media goes out there, says the opposite with nothing to back it up at the time other than opinion. They harp away on that point so much that by the time the scientific polls come out, a lot of them say Hillary won. But when you go into the methodology of the polling, you find many of the people they polled didn't even watch the debate. They watched coverage of the debate or the commentary on the debate in the mainstream media after the debate, and from that they took away Hillary won. And so when a pollster calls, they say, did you watch the debate? No, I didn't. Who do you think won? Hillary won. They put that in the poll, and then you have to dig it deep into the methodology to find out exactly what's happening here. So in other words, a lot of the articles and the headlines don't say Hillary won in scientific polling, and then, you know, they hedge in the article and say, but a lot of these people who say that didn't watch the debate. Oh, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. We said it directly after the debate. It wasn't, to me, it was so overt that I started thinking, no, this might just be a flat-out conspiracy. Like, I'm not a big guy on formal conspiracies. I think incentives, you know, can push people in certain directions where you don't need a formal conspiracy in order to get a certain outcome. In this case, there might be a formal conspiracy because you might have people from Hillary Clinton's campaign calling people that they know with the different media outlets who are higher ups in the companies and telling them, okay, here's the deal, you know, push out this message or that message or whatever. Guys, Slate, CNN, Time Magazine, and a cadre of other media outlets had headlines saying clean sweep for Hillary, you know, confident victory, all types of shit, directly after the debate, when, again, there was zero backing for that opinion. You would have to say that is only my opinion if you write an article like that, but, of course, a lot of these articles didn't even put that. They made it seem like it was a fact when all the polls said the opposite at the time. And then, again, the new polls have Hillary winning, but a lot of the people they talked to didn't even watch the fucking debate, and they just saw the media coverage afterwards, so it was skewed in that direction. Now, what happens when you narrow the poll to people who actually watched the debate? Well, Google Consumer Surveys did exactly that, scientific poll. They found, quote, Sanders got 43.7%, Clinton 29.7%. So that has Bernie winning by quite a bit. Now, I want to be clear, guys, and I said this directly after the debate. I didn't think Bernie Sanders won by a mile and a half, as a lot of the evidence indicated. I thought he won, but by a little bit. I take no joy in saying that. I prefer him over the other candidates. But it is what it is. I thought that Hillary, while she was utterly substanceless and, you know, leaning right on so many issues, if you look at the debate through the eyes of your average American who doesn't care about politics, they might go, oh, she seems more calm and together. Therefore, hey, I think, you know, she won. So I take no pleasure in saying that. And I'm not saying, hey, it's over now. Let's not keep pushing for Bernie. Let's not keep things in perspective here. But I thought he won by a little. Now we're getting not only unscientific polls, but scientific polls that say he won by a lot. And that's certainly more relevant than anything that I have to say and what my gut feeling is. And remember, if you're still like, I don't know, Kyle, I don't think that this was an overt kind of thing happening here in the mainstream media. Remember that CNN.com took down a snap poll that had Bernie winning with between 75% and 81% of the people who watched the debate. They took that down and they replaced it with a political prediction thing, which was not a poll, but it misleadingly looked like a poll, and it had Hillary Clinton winning by a mile. Who does that? Who replaces a poll with something that's not a poll, but it looks like a poll, and oh, lo and behold, the person who were claiming one, even though they didn't win, is winning in this fake poll thing too. And then they also, to put the cherry on top, we're deleting pro-Bernie Sanders comments, as we spoke about on Friday. Guys, this election, this race is not over. This primary is not over. But facts are facts, and we have to combat the narrative coming from the mainstream media when it's not true. And Hillary is the establishment candidate. The media that we're talking about here, this is the establishment media. Their interests converge. It appears like they're pushing for their candidate, and we just need to make sure that we remain objective, we look at all the evidence, and we tell you what's really happening. And the reality is that, is it fine for somebody to have an opinion that I think Hillary won? Sure, that's fine. But just remember, the polling that's actually trustworthy, not just the unscientific polling, the snap polling after the debate, because you shouldn't value that as much, but the real scientific polls for people who watch the debate, that says Bernie Sanders won. You can like it or hate it, but it is what it is, and it's true. And the media should report just the facts, but they're not doing that. Okay. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Bernie actually disappoints us on one issue. We'll get into that. And then Bill Maher tries to explain to Bernie what we should do in terms of labels and how you should talk about socialism to the American people. And much later on in the show, we got a creationist heading an education commission because we live in fucking backwards land. And Saudi Arabia opens up a new Wahhabi research center, which I will proceed to rip. So we have that and much, much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. Oh, hate to do it, but I got to do it. Bernie Sanders is, let's just call it a swing and a miss on one of these very, very important issues. Bernie Sanders weighed in on the issue of the war in Afghanistan, and this is one of the very few issues where he let me down. It was a swing and a miss. The Huffington Post reports, quote, Bernie said Sunday that he supports Obama's decision to keep troops in Afghanistan, prolonging the war beyond 2016. Obama announced last week that he would keep 5,500 U.S. troops in Afghanistan after he leaves office in 2017, breaking his promise to end the war during his tenure. During an interview on ABC's This Week, George Stephanopoulos asked Sanders whether he backs keeping U.S. troops in the country, and he said, quote, well, yeah, I won't give you the exact number. Clearly, we do not want to see the Taliban gain more power, and I think we need a certain nucleus of American troops present in Afghanistan to try to provide the training and support the Afghan army needs. What is victory, though, Bernie? That's my question. Because this is, we're so sick and tired of it. I mean, when we started the war on terror, there were some specific goals, and what would be victory was understood generally throughout the country. Like, for example, in Afghanistan, the idea was, hey, Al-Qaeda is being housed by the Taliban, so we need to just go in there, knock out Al-Qaeda, and then we're done. Well, mission accomplished on that. But we stayed there longer afterwards, which means that you lied to us when you said the original goal is what it is, which is knocking out Al-Qaeda. That's not true because you're still there. So it's false. What you told us is not correct. That wasn't the real reason for going in. Because according to our CIA, just for the record here, we have 100 or less Al-Qaeda operatives still in Afghanistan, but we're still fighting there. And then when people bring up, well, yeah, I mean, but the Taliban sucks, doesn't it, Kyle? What, are you defending the Taliban? Of course I'm not fucking defending the Taliban, but when you have a foreign policy, you have to have a criteria by which you make these decisions, and you say we're going to go fight in place X or region Y, and if your only reason is the Taliban sucks, therefore we need to stay there and occupy there and do all these other things, well, then you also have to go and fight Boko Haram. You also have to go and fight al-Shabaab. You also have to go and fight other jihadist organizations, wherever they may be. You also have to go and fight non-religious terrorists. You have to go into the other war-torn regions like South Sudan and the Congo. You have to be involved in many different places if your standard is these guys are bad, we need to stop them from doing X, Y, and Z. Well, if that really is your goal, why don't you start with not supporting monsters? Because we know that we support many monsters all around the world. And not only are we not having a conversation about going in there and knocking them out, we're supporting them. We're helping them. And so it's not even like a neutral thing where, hey, you know, world's a crazy place. I can't stop everything bad. Let's not, you know, get involved. No, we're helped. Like Saudi Arabia, for example, a Wahhabi government, that they implement brutally repressive policies against virtually all minority communities. And, you know, they kill people for drug smuggling and they kill people for apostasy. And atheism is listed as, if you're an atheist, you're listed as a terrorist in Saudi Arabia. And we're actively supporting those people. So it's not about humanitarianism and altruism. There are ulterior motives here. But Bernie seems to have fallen for this hook, line, and sinker. Why would we say that? What's the goal? What's your goal? Why are you still there? Well, again, we don't want the Taliban to take over. There's a lot of bad people taking over a lot of different places, but you're focused in still staying in Afghanistan. I don't want to spend the money to still be there, and the American people don't want to be there anymore either, and there's not a direct threat, the U.S. homeland, coming from there, so let's get the fuck out of there. And to this idea that, well, I mean, it's like our side is in favor of a utopia there, and the bad guys are so bad that we have to, stay there for the forces of good to prevail. Our side in Afghanistan rapes kids. That's not hyperbole. That's a fact. We covered the story on the show. The New York Times had a great investigative report. There were like a couple of U.S. soldiers who lost their shit and left Afghanistan because they said, how can I fight in a war where the Afghan soldiers on our side are raping children? There was a story about how one of the top warlords who was on our side against the Taliban had a kid chained to his fucking bed when a U.S. soldier went in there to talk to him. And they were ordered by higher-ups in the military, let them do what they do. It's a different culture. So you got to let them do what they do. And remember, you're there to protect liberty and freedom. The liberty and freedom to fuck kids? No, it's a clusterfuck. Bernie, you're better than this. You're smarter than this. I mean, and you're the guy who always talks about democracy and listening to the people. Afghanistan right now is less popular than the war in Vietnam was at its most unpopular point. So there's no debate here. There's no conversation here. What are you talking about? But they're afraid, when we pull out, it'll get worse, and what are we going to do about it? I don't care. I don't care. In the same way that we're not fucking clamoring to go into South Sudan or the Congo, I feel bad if it gets even worse in those areas. But I'm done playing world policeman, especially when we know that we're not even playing world policeman to uphold any kind of values. We're not doing that. The record is pretty clear. You know, we were more involved in Iraq for oil, for example, for the military-industrial complex and profits. What we do around the world has much more to do with imperialism and geopolitics and a global chessboard and a power struggle than any kind of, you know, high-minded ideals. And when we talk about Afghanistan, we're talking about a mineral-rich country and a country that has a tremendous amount of opium. Is that the sole reason why we're there? No. But is that a part of it? Absolutely. I mean, we've covered the story on the show where U.S. soldiers are defending poppy fields, where opium comes from, for people in Afghanistan. Why are you defending it? I mean, isn't the whole thing, war on drugs, we're against drugs so much, except for when we're protecting them in a foreign country that we shouldn't be in the first place? Guys, so much of this doesn't add up, and it just doesn't make sense. And I'm tired of going around the world and being involved in all these different conflicts. The only time I would use the military is to protect from an imminent attack against the nation. If there's a genocide happening somewhere and it's perfectly clear, well then, okay, the international community can act together. But I expect the same of us that I expect from every other country in the world, whether it's Iran or Greenland or Australia. I don't want to go on these fucking wild adventures where we're involved in 7 different countries right now, militarily. No, that's not... If I'm voting for a liberal, that shouldn't be the choice I have. Either you invade every country ever with the crazy warhawk Republicans who want to put ground troops everywhere, or you go soft imperialism with people like Obama and Hillary and to some extent Bernie, where you just do some drone strikes here and there and some airstrikes. We keep 5,000 or 10,000 troops in your country because fuck off, that's why. No, I'm done. I'm done with that. Where are the candidates that say, how about this? I don't want to be anywhere militarily at the moment. How about that? Is that radical? Radical Kyle. He doesn't want to be involved in any wars while there's not a direct threat against us at the moment. No, that used to be called common sense, and somewhere along the line, we lost our way. All right, let's have a conversation about socialism. I think this is maybe 2 minutes and 30 seconds for this clip, something like that. Bernie Sanders and Bill Maher had a conversation about selling the concept of socialism to the American people. Let's take a look.
We have to teach Americans what this is.
Yep.
And I don't know if we're doing that yet.
Okay.
I don't think most Americans realize they're already socialists.
In certain respects, okay. Let's start off with what it is not what we want to change. We want to deal with the grotesque level of income and wealth inequality in America. Very few people think it is acceptable or moral that the top 0.1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. That we have seen a proliferate...
But see, Bernie, you always say that, and I think even the Republicans are not for income inequality. They hear that, but it doesn't compute that that's going to be solved by socialism. Socialism is the programs they already like. They like Social Security. That's socialism.
But here,
they like Medicare. They like the VA. They like
right.
the military.
So that's exactly
that's,
right.
It's already a socialist country.
But we have to... No, it's not a socialist country.
It's quasi.
There are some socialist programs. But what we have got to do is remind fellow Americans that every other major country on earth guarantees health care to all people as a right, and they do it more cost-effectively than we do. We have got to inform the American people that we are the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee paid family and medical leave. We have got to remind the American people that there's something a little bit crazy when in America we have more people in jail, disproportionately people of color, than any other major country on earth.
All right. But I don't know if we're still undemonizing this word socialism. This is my big thing tonight, to get you to undemonize this word. Because, you know, they do polls on who people would vote for. Like, would people vote for a woman, a Jew, a black? Those are in, like, the low 90s, like 92, 91% of the people. And of course, the other 8%, I think we know who those people are. You won't be getting their vote. Then, like, 75% of Americans would now vote for a gay person. That's a big change from 10 years ago.
Yep.
60% would vote for a Muslim. 58% would vote for an atheist. Socialist, 47. It's at the very bottom of the barrel. They hear socialist, they think herpes, Bernie. We have to make movement, if you like, to correlate what we're talking about. Because on every one of the major issues I am talking about, the American people agree.
So I actually really, really like Bill Maher's strategy there. Because when you ask Bernie Sanders what he means by socialism or democratic socialism, as he did in the debate, he almost immediately goes to income inequality, which obviously is a huge thing. As Maher said, people are against it, even if they're Republicans, so it makes sense to a certain extent to respond like that. But I also think Maher is right when he says people don't make that connection, though, in their mind. When you're asked about socialism or democratic socialism and you jump to, well, the problem is the top 1% make X amount of the money, and you go on and on. It's like people are going, I agree with that, but they don't know that that's kind of in response to the question. They think, if anything, that might be a slight sidestep of the question, and you're just going on about the issues you care about. What Maher is saying is, instead of answering it like that, your answer should be really direct, really straightforward, and, you know, something that everybody would agree with and like, where you say, we're already, to a certain extent, a socialist country. Do you like Social Security? Do you like Medicare? Do you like Medicaid? Do you like having nice paved roads? Do you like clean drinking water? Do you like the military, which protects you? Do you like, you go down a list of the different things. And then at the end of it, it has to be the case that even Republicans are like, I do like the military. That's sure good. And you have to make people go, oh, okay, so that's what it's not some sort of revolutionary thing. And in the debate at one point, the irrelevant Jim Webb actually said to Bernie Sanders, I love my friend Bernie, but I don't think the revolution is coming. And really the response to that is, he doesn't want a fucking revolution. He just wants to make the country better issue for issue, issue by issue. And like Bernie said at the end there, on the actual issues themselves, Bernie Sanders agrees more with the American people than any other candidate. And that's not an opinion, that's a fact. So I like what Bernie has to say, of course, and he's very heavy in the substance, and he's a policy wonk, which is good. But I like that Maher is kind of trying to bridge the gap there, where he wants to make it so there's zero interpretation that's involved with the people listening. So when he says, hey, I believe in democratic socialism, and people ask you, what is that? You go, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, every program you like. And then people go, oh, okay, great. So where would we expand that to? And then you describe universal health care, universal education, universal child care, stuff like that, which Bernie has alluded to before, more paid vacation by law. We're one of the only modern countries on earth that does not have that right now. So the other thing I would add to that, though, is so Maher's right on the marketing of it. And Maher's one of the few people on the left who, for a very long time, he's been great on the marketing of liberal ideas. The Democratic Party sucks balls, and they're weak, and they're too far right-wing, and they're corporatist. But Maher, for the longest time, has been screaming at them, use facts and double down and frame it this way, and he's usually right when he talks about it. But I would add that Bernie should also say, well, I'm not just a socialist, as he has in the past, but I believe in a hybrid system. So when you're asked, why don't you believe in capitalism, you should immediately say, no, I believe in a hybrid system, and the other part of that is capitalism. So when he was pushed in the debate, he went on to clarify, and he said, when Hillary was like, I believe in small business and entrepreneurship, that's what this country is based off of, Bernie was like, well, of course I believe in that too. But what I'm saying to Bernie is, I don't like the fact that you have to wait to clarify on it when somebody pushes you, because you gave Hillary a win in that back and forth, because Hillary was the one who looked like she's standing up for the American dream and the greatest economy ever, and even though it's a fact-free, stupid rant, people hear that, they go, okay, I see that. That's not a radical change, but it's a little bit of a change. I want to go with that. No, you have to say up front, I believe in a hybrid system that includes capitalism. I love small business. I love medium-sized business, as Bernie went on to clarify in the debate. But focus on that a little bit more up front so people don't get that tasting in their mouth like, you know, oh my God, the Soviet Union, Cuba, yada, yada. Now, again, Bernie hasn't had that negative connotation that people take away from him when he talks, but I'm afraid that the closer we get to a general, the more the attacks will ramp up on him and the more he can be misperceived as that, and people can, you know, present him in a way where they highlight the negatives and they focus on, you know, the terms and the definitions, and that could be something that scares people away. Obviously, I don't agree that it should scare them away, but he can be smeared enough where it'll scare people away. So what I'm saying is kneecap that shit. Kneecap it right now, and I think that's what Mar's getting at too, when Mar says, this is how you respond when people say, oh, you're a democratic socialist or a socialist. You should, in essence, say, so are you, and here's why, and it's a fact. So an interesting conversation. Now, Bernie Sanders also said he's going to come out now and do some kind of a speech on the principles of democratic socialism, and he called it a big speech. So we'll see how much of this he took away from it, how much he agrees with Marr, how much he agrees with people telling him to frame it slightly differently. But either way, I hope the message gets through, because it is certainly true that Bernie Sanders represents what the American people want much more. All right, let me do one more, and then we'll take our final break. Donald Trump ripped Jeb Bush on Twitter for saying that George Bush kept us safe. And Jeb Bush went on CNN to do some damage control and to respond, and he got owned by Jake Tapper.
So what are you objecting to about Mr. Trump's remarks about 9/11 and your brother?
Look, my brother responded to a crisis, and he did it as you would hope a president would do. He united the country, he organized our country, and he kept us safe. And there's no denying that. The great majority of Americans believe that, and I don't know why he keeps bringing this up. It doesn't show that he's a serious person as it relates to being commander-in-chief and being the architect of a foreign policy. Across the spectrum of foreign policy, Mr. Trump talks about things that as though he's still on The Apprentice. I mean, literally, talking about Syria, saying ISIS should take out Assad, then Russia should take out ISIS as though it was some kind of board game and not a serious approach. This is just another example of the lack of seriousness, and this is a serious time. We're under grave threats again, and I think we need a president with a steady hand.
To play devil's advocate, do you think it's at all possible that your loyalty to your brother, while very admirable on a personal level, might be in some ways a political or policy liability blinding you to mistakes he made?
No, I mean, so next week Mr. Trump is probably going to say that FDR was around when Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. It's what you do after that matters, and that's the sign of leadership. Does anybody actually blame my brother for the attacks on 9/11? If they do, they're totally marginalized in our society. It's what he did afterwards that matter, and I'm proud of him, and so are a bunch of other people. You don't have to have your last name named Bush to be able to understand that. It just calls into question Mr. Trump's credibility as a commander-in-chief and an architect of the next generation foreign policy, which we desperately need in this country right now.
Obviously, Al-Qaeda was responsible for the terrorist attack of 9/11. But how do you respond to critics who ask, if your brother and his administration bear no responsibility at all, how do you then make the jump that President Obama and Secretary Clinton are responsible for what happened at Benghazi?
Whoops.
Well, it's the question on Benghazi, which is hopefully will now finally get the truth to it, is was the place secure? They had a responsibility, the Department of State, to have proper security. There were calls for security. It looks like they didn't get it. And how was the response in the aftermath of the attack? Was there a chance that these four American lives could have been saved? That's what the investigation is about. It's not a political issue. It's not about the broad policy issue. Is were we doing the job of protecting our embassies and our consulates? And during the period, those hours after the attack started, could they have been saved?
Well, that's kind of proving the point of the critics I was just asking about, because you don't want to have your brother bear responsibility for 9/11, and I understand that argument, and al-Qaeda is responsible, but why are the terrorists not the ones who were responsible for these attacks in Libya?
They are. Of course they are, but... Of course they are, but if the ambassador was asking for additional security and didn't get it, that's a proper point. And if it's proven that that the security was adequate compared to other embassies, fine, we'll move on.
So in Benghazi, perhaps there were some memos beforehand that said, hey, we may have a problem here, you might want to pay attention to it. And because of that, obviously you can blame Hillary Clinton, you can blame President Obama. They failed when it came to security. It's not like with my brother when it came to the 9/11 attacks, the worst attacks on American soil ever, that there was some kind of memo beforehand that said something like, Bin Laden determined to attack in United States. Oh, that's right. That's exactly what happened. Intelligence agencies had repeatedly warned George Bush about Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and he didn't do dick about it. He did nothing about it. In fact, Clinton used to have meetings on bin Laden often. George Bush did not. Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., and what did George W. Bush do about it? Nothing. He read fucking My Little Pony or whatever the fuck it was to some little kids. And then when he was told that the country's under attack, he had to sit there for a little bit to collect his thoughts instead of springing right into action. The country's under attack. Anyway, where was I, kids? Page 8, was it? Come on. No, what's so annoying about this is the double standard. Dude, I have no problem. So if you want to blame Obama, or you want to blame the administration or Hillary Clinton, if indeed there were warnings about, hey, you need more security in this place, and they didn't do it, that's a fair criticism. Is it something that's worthy of, have hearings for 8 years straight? They've, in essence, trying to do that. No, it's not. But is there a criticism to be had there of, you should have had your shit more together? Absolutely, that's a fair criticism. But when it comes to George Bush, why is that not also a fair criticism? That's the most fair criticism I've ever heard, because he didn't do anything about it, and there were warnings. In the case of Benghazi, he says there are warnings. I don't know for sure, but if there are, okay, criticize him. But for Bush, he's like, nope, that's my brother. That's my brother. So you can't come out against him. I mean, that's wrong. He doesn't get a fucking mulligan, Jeb. I love how he said this in the debate as if it's like common knowledge. At least my brother kept us safe. Except for the first time when he didn't, and it was the worst fucking attack on U.S. soil in history. So that's not true. It's not correct. There are no mulligans when it comes to national security. It's so sad. So Trump is 100%. He's pointing out a fact. He didn't keep us fucking safe. End of conversation. Why are we debating this? Because he's like, he got his feels hurt. Oh, my family. You can't say something bad about my family. And then all projection, talking about Trump's foreign policy. He's like, Trump, the problem is he doesn't know anything about foreign policy. That's the problem. He said that in Syria, Putin should fight ISIS. He thinks that the world is like a chessboard or something. No, all projection. You think the world is a chessboard, and your foreign policy sucks. You think the world is a chessboard because you come from the same neocon school of thought that your brother did and Bill Kristol and Paul Wolfowitz, where they think U.S. power needs to dominate everywhere. And you're the one that, when you laid out your Iraq policy recently, it's identical to your brother. It's identical to it. So you're attacking Trump for his foreign policy. I'm no fan of Trump, but when Trump says in Syria we should do nothing and we should maybe let Putin kill jihadist rebels, that's a much smarter thing than anything you've ever said on foreign policy. So it's just embarrassing. You're a fucking embarrassment, okay? You're born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Daddy was president. Your brother was president. And you want to do it. So when we sit down at Thanksgiving dinner, we can talk about when we led the country and we're fucking controlled like corporate puppets. That's what it's all about. Oh, you're a big sellout family, just like the Clintons. So this isn't a partisan fucking thing I'm doing here. But you're a sellout. You know, you're corporate puppet 101. They know they can trust you. Nobody fucking likes you in the country. But Daddy and my brother were president, so I'm going to defend my brother on TV, and I can't wait until I can become president because it's a family thing. We have dynasties in America. Tell me again how we're a democracy. Please. And we all know just it really is an oligarchy, not just because you have somebody like Jeb Bush, who might win again, even though he's doing shitty in the polls, but because of all the money. So much money pouring into politics, and the politicians do the bidding of the corporations, and that's why we have such shitty policies. But, you know, it's not like we – a lot of people expect a certain level of corruption, but hope that there's some level of competence there to counterbalance the corruption. With a guy like Jeb Bush, it's not even like they're competent and corrupt. He's an incompetent idiot, and he's corrupt. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Rand Paul was asked about Bernie Sanders, and he said the dumbest thing you've ever heard. And then we'll get into the UN is leaning towards decriminalizing drugs and pushing for that and a bunch of other stuff. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Hey!
of a bitch. All right, we're back, y'all. And, we got Rand Paul in desperation mode with his campaign. And, it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty. Rand Paul was asked about Bernie Sanders and the Democratic debate, and he somehow managed to have the dumbest response of all the Republican candidates.
I want to ask you about the debate. Did you watch it? What were your impressions?
Well, I think it's good to know that socialism is alive and well in the Democrat Party. And that it's not only alive and well and one of their leading candidates as a socialist, they're all trying to outdo each other in their disdain for the economic system of capitalism that made us great. So, it amazes me, and it actually kind of scares me. And I've been making and spending more time going after Bernie and socialism because I don't want America to succumb to the notion that there's anything good about socialism. I think it's not an accident of history that most of the times when socialism has been tried, that attendant with that has been mass genocide of people or any of those who object to it. Stalin killed tens of millions of people. Mao killed tens of millions of people. Pol Pot killed millions of people. When you have a command economy, when everything is dictated from one authority, that's socialism, but it doesn't come easily to those who resist it.
That's one of the most ignorant things I've ever heard Rand Paul say. So he's having a conversation about the Democratic Party and Bernie's socialism, and he goes right to Stalin, Pol Pot, Mao, and mass genocide. All right, that's so confused I don't know where to start. Actually, let's do it right here. That's not socialism. That's authoritarian communism. Totally different. Totally different. In no way is Bernie Sanders an authoritarian. And why are you marrying it with, what, you think Bernie Sanders is going to do a fucking genocide? And remember, socialism, the kind that he's talking about, time and time again, he said, look at Sweden. Look at Norway. Look at Denmark. Look at Iceland. Look at the Scandinavian region, the Nordic region. He's telling you what he's talking about, and you go, no, Stalin, Pol Pot, Mao, genocidal authoritarian communist dictators. That's such an amazing straw man that it blows my mind. I mean, that's like me saying about Rand Paul, well, Rand Paul's on the right wing of the political spectrum. He's a conservative. You know who else was on the right wing of the political spectrum? Hitler, the Nazis. They're fascists through and through. So, hey, we got to be careful for all the Republicans because all the Republicans, I mean, look, whenever you have a right-wing style of government set up, I mean, what has happened historically when you have right-wing government set up? I mean, you have fascism, you have authoritarian leaders, like when it comes to dictators, you have imperialist powers. I mean, all right-wingers, I guess that's what, they all morph into that. Would that be a fair argument? Is it fair to categorize a guy like Bernie Sanders as a genocidal authoritarian communist? No. And Rand Paul might be wondering why his campaign officially is ass cheeks. The answer is exactly what you're seeing here. He's lost his way. I mean, this is a guy who used to make decent points about criminal justice reform and drug policy and foreign policy. I always disagreed with him on economics, but he was, as Bill Maher calls them, a potty-trained Republican. Now he's just been trying to – he's doing so poorly in the polls because he hasn't been himself that his answer to that problem is to be even less of himself and to say even dumber shit and to not focus on the issues but launch ridiculous personal attacks calling guys like Bernie Sanders genocidal, possibly genocidal crazy people. No, I'm done with you, Rand, and you're done with you, and the people are done with you. We all saw what happened when you streamed the day of you doing the shit that you do. You were miserable, and you think you're owed the Republican Party to be like, oh, yeah, we're with that guy? No, you have to have a good campaign, have good positions, focus on the substance, and you didn't do that because you wanted the thing so bad that Daddy couldn't get, but at least Daddy was fucking principled, and he can look at himself in the mirror when the day's over. You, on the other hand, shouldn't be able to do that, and if you are able to look yourself in the mirror, don't. because you shouldn't look at yourself in the mirror because you're a fucking sellout and you suck. All right, let's go to, speaking of drugs, which we briefly alluded to in the fiery rant against Rand Paul there. The Huffington Post is reporting that the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime is planning a historic move towards drug decriminalization. So the billionaire Richard Branson teamed up with the UN on this, and he said the following, quote, "This is a refreshing shift that could go a long way to finally ending the needless criminalization of millions of drug users around the world. We should treat drug use as a health issue, not as a crime. Globally, more than 1 in 5 people sentenced to prison are sentenced for drug offenses. This is a big move and part of a global awakening that the war on drugs is not only a failure, but causes devastating public health and safety harms." A marijuana advocacy group weighed in on this as well, and they said this, quote, "Decriminalizing possession is an important step forward and will protect users from getting life-damaging criminal records, but until we fully legalize and regulate drugs, their production and profits will remain in the hands of violent organized crime networks." All right, so that's totally true, and my question to the UN is, what are you waiting for? Now, they recently did something else that was similar to this. They're trying to change the strategy on the way we approach drugs, but they're not going full steam ahead yet. And unfortunately, in other ways, I think they've damaged their reputation, and that really pisses me off, because then when they're right about something, you know, it might not get as much credibility and people might not care as much. So, for example, when they put Saudi Arabia on the Human Rights Council, you know you done fucked up, right? Everybody rolls their eyes when you do that, because that's ridiculous. How can anybody do that? When you, you know, propose solutions to online harassment that include just flat-out censoring free speech because people like Anita Sarkeesian went and complained to you, you know you done fucked up, right? You're supposed to be the body that protects freedom of speech. Yes, even the freedom for people to be fucking vicious douches online. Believe me, if anybody should be against that, it's me. I get a lot of vicious douches attacking me. But I understand it's par for the course. There's a beautiful aspect to the freedom of that that we want to preserve. So unfortunately, with the UN looking ridiculous in other realms, I feel like when they're right on something, people aren't going to listen as much. But understand, guys, they are right on this. And just because they're wrong miserably about some issues doesn't mean that everything they've ever said and everything they ever will do is incorrect. That's not true. So should we push for decriminalization? Fuck yes. That should be the least thing we should be moving towards now. And they go on to say that, well, what they're really doing is pushing for legalization of marijuana, like in Uruguay, but decriminalize everything else. So they're not talking about legalizing everything else yet, but it's decriminalize everything else, legalize marijuana. That's the message. I would prefer they push for legalizing everything, but we're not at that point yet. But hey, I'll take it, because as long as we're starting to go down this road, it is moving in the right direction, and I just want you to press down on that gas pedal and let's move faster and let's go, you know, as aggressively as we can, because it's a fucking outrage that we still live in a country in the U.S., but around the world too, many other countries, we fucking lock people up because they are changing their consciousness slightly by using a substance. I've never heard of anything more anti-freedom than that. All right, now, I got 3 more left here. Probably should have enough time to get it in. We'll see. Raw Story is reporting that Maine's ultra-conservative governor, Paul LePage, appointed a creationist to head the state's education commission. Quote, "Bill Beardsley, which is an awesome name, will replace the retiring Jim Ryer as acting education commissioner." Beardsley was among the Republican candidates LePage defeated in 2010 for the party's gubernatorial nomination, and he revealed some of his staunchly conservative and anti-science positions during the lightning round of a GOP candidates debate on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. They say Beardsley was asked whether the state's public schools should teach creationism alongside evolution, and he said simply, "I would teach creationism." So it appears not just, yeah, I teach creationism alongside evolution, more of, no, let's just do creationism. Ooh, what a genius we're dealing with here. The candidates were also asked whether they believe global warming was caused by human activities. Beardsley said, I believe we should be focusing on our economy rather than chasing after issues that haven't been proven in science. I'm sure he reads the best scientific journals on this. LePage can permanently appoint Beardsley as education commissioner after his six-month term as acting commissioner expires, but the permanent appointment must be approved by the education committee and the Board of Education, and the state Senate must then confirm the appointment. Now, I don't know the breakdown in Maine of how many conservatives are there in the state Senate versus not, and I don't know how the Board of Education is structured or anything, but good googly moogly, if this guy gets permanent status as the head of education in Maine, that's fucked up. I don't know how else to say it. The dude is a creationist, and he's going to be the state's education commissioner. He's a creationist. No, you can't be in charge of education if you don't believe in education. That's like somebody, I'm going to be the captain on the hockey team. Oh, really? That's cool. You sure? Yeah, but I'm not going to be on the team. Well, then you can't be the captain of the hockey team. You're not on the fucking team. I'm going to lead education. Well, but all your positions have nothing to do with education. That's right. I don't believe in education, but I'm going to lead education. Why not just call him like an Ayatollah or some shit? Get it over with. Call him a cleric. You know, say, oh, just religious asshole education to indoctrinate kids with over-the-top religious fundamentalist propaganda. Even his position on climate change is totally anti-science. So he doesn't believe in science, he doesn't believe in education, but he's going to be in charge of education. Unfortunately, that's how extreme many Republicans have become today in the United States of America, where they are a national embarrassment. And again, it's not just the right-wingers, the far right-wingers, I should say, in the U.S. It's in all different countries, man. All countries have their crazy fucking knuckle-dragging right-wingers, but that's the only way to describe this, guys. They take issues that are not debatable, and they make it debatable. Even creationism and evolution. That's not two opposing things. There's no debate going on there. That's like saying, should we fucking teach the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe as science, or should we go to the science textbook to discuss science? That's not a debate. There's no debate there. One of the things is science, the other one is not. It's the same thing with this. But this is the power of ignorance and the power of religious indoctrination, where you get people to think like, well, why can't you just teach creationism alongside and teach every theory? But there's not, one is right and one is not. That's like saying when you teach about having babies, teach the theory of reproduction and teach the theory of the stork coming and giving people a baby. But that doesn't make sense because that's not right. We know that's not right, so why would you teach the kids that? And you get idiots like, this ain't fuck the real science part. Don't even teach that half the time. Only teach the nonsense. Well, if they really end up having this guy permanently, or even for a little bit, as the education commissioner, Maine, or this particular place in Maine, they need to change their name to Foxville, because that's what all the kids will be learning under morons like this. All right, now, speaking of crazy religious people, we go to the fundamentalist government of Saudi Arabia. I finished early today, which is nice. The AFP is reporting on a new Wahhabi research center in Saudi Arabia. They say the following, quote, it's set to open on the capital Riyadh, and it looks fitting for a branch of Islam considered inflexible, intolerant, and unchanging. Imposing with its limestone blocks, their bulk lightened only by glass-enclosed bridges, the center is part of a major development project shepherded by Saudi King Salman. The building honors Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Wahhab, the 18th century fundamentalist preacher who co-founded the Saudi state. It is a clear sign that his legacy remains central to the Saudi soul, despite his strict doctrine and accusations it is fueling deadly Sunni extremism around the world, including the murderous drive of ISIS militants. Featuring cafes and palm trees decorated with tiny lights, the project is set in Adiriyya, birthplace of the ruling Saud dynasty. It was here that Abdul Wahab's partnership with a contemporary local chief, Imam Muhammad bin Saud, laid the foundations for today's kingdom and its reliance on the Sheikh's 270-year-old teachings. Abdul Wahab preached Tawhid, the oneness of God, which meant opposition to the worship of saints and Shiism, a prohibition on images of living beings, and the implementation of Sharia law. He saw his doctrine as a return to Islam as practiced by the first generation of Muslims. And finally, they say, his pact with Saud in the 1740s gave legitimacy to the first head of the royal house, who in return implemented Abdul Wahab's strict version of the Islamic faith. The partnership continues to this day, with the ruling family maintaining its tight grip on political life and puritanical clerics preaching strict codes of conduct that make Saudi Arabia among the world's most conservative countries. Women are forbidden from driving, there is no intermingling of the sexes, and cinemas and alcohol are banned, while the militant preaching associated with Wahhabi thought is accused of inspiring extremists from bin Laden to ISIS. Okay, so, as I was reading this piece, here's my main takeaway. To have, now granted, the government is, it's already a Wahhabi government or a Salafist government. To have that be your government, and to build fucking shrines and buildings to respect the ideology, that honestly is like building fucking shrines to the KKK. Because what we're talking about here, Wahhabism is, you know, extreme fundamentalism. It's the furthest right-wing version of Islam humanly possible. And they say this is the ideology that, you know, the worst militant groups, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, have taken and gone even some more extreme somehow with it. But the fact that Saudi Arabia is building, you know, new projects geared towards celebrating this, that's a fucking red flag, and that says that they should not be our top fucking ally. I mean, you want to talk about an unholy alliance, you got to break up that alliance, man. Because when the country itself and the government itself, they're based on just absolute far-right Islamic extremism, you can't, that it's going to crumble. That relationship is going to crumble because they hate the West openly. We're not too fond of them. And you guys know me. I'm not calling for some sort of a fucking war. But what I'm saying is you shouldn't keep rewarding a country like that when they're doing the equivalent of building fucking shrines and whatever, mansions to promote the KKK. That really is the equivalent of what it would be like here in the U.S. So you got to do something. I mean, we've spoken about Al-Nimr before. We've spoken about they beheaded over 100 people, killed over 100 people for crimes ranging from fucking drug use to sorcery to apostasy. I mean, that can't be your top ally. And they especially can't get the international recognition they do. They can't sit on the Human Rights Council. That's craziness. And I fear that when I read articles like this, and my takeaway is, okay, that's not good. I fear that in the U.S., since they've been our ally for so long, we're so thick to it that we're just like, well, whatever, it is what it is. You know, like, let them do whatever they want to do, and it's whatever. But they're fucking, it's the same as people in the U.S. building shrines to the KKK, and that, like, being the official government stance. Cool. That's not okay. And the least we could do is, over time, gradually break off economic ties and make it so that we're not dependent on making this state uber wealthy, because they're not using that wealth in any way that is having a positive outcome in the world. All right, and finally, the International Business Times is reporting that the Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas will protest against Kentucky clerk Kim Davis today. Oh, that's so adorable. They say, quote, the church tweeted an image saying that the Rowan County clerk who denied marriage licenses to gay couples on religious grounds was a proud, self-righteous hypocrite and an adulterer. The Baptist Church argued that Davis committed adultery by getting divorced and remarried four times. The Topeka-based group planned to protest in front of Davis's home. That man that Kim Davis is living with and calling her husband is not. Her husband is Dwayne Wallace, who she married when she was 18 years old. It was adultery at the beginning, adultery in the middle, and it is indeed adultery today. That's what one of the Westboro Baptist Church members said. Somebody mark the calendar. This may be the first time I've ever and we've ever kind of agreed with the Westboro Baptist Church. Now, they're one of the most loathsome groups in the U.S. I mean, they've protested murdered kids. I mean, they wanted to protest Robin Williams' death. Why? Who knows? Oh, he did drugs at one time, and he was an uber-Christian, so, fuck him. Make him go to hell. They're crazy people. There's no doubt about it. And they're extremist religious right-wing pricks. But what they're saying about Kim Davis is totally true. She won't say, oh, it's in the Bible, it's not debatable, you know, they're anti-gay, so I'm not going to marry them because I'm listening to God's law. Well, you're listening to God's law, except when you're not listening to God's law, when you're sucking off four dudes and you married four different dudes. And remember, the way it went down is while she was with one of the husbands, she was with the other husband, and blah, 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 blah. Well, then you're not listening to God's word. And she says, no, it's okay, because we saw the interview. No, it's okay, he's forgiven me, I spoke to him. Really? Is that all, so that's all that needs to happen for you to continue to sin? You're not allowed to remarry, but you're remarried multiple times. So all you got to do is say, I'm sorry, God, and it's okay, cool, so you can live in sin further. So then why can't gay people, when they come in front of you, say, oh, you don't like the fact that we're gay? God, I'm so sorry, will you please forgive us? Okay, he forgives me, now you got to give me the marriage license. And she would say, but I can't, that, you know, I'm not allowed to do gay marriage. God says it's in the Bible, it's a sin. Right, and so you getting remarried is also a sin, but you apologize, and then apparently you were allowed to get remarried. So why can't they get fucking married if they say, oh, God, I'm so sorry that I'm gay? It's already bullshit that they would have to do that in your mind, but that's the same standard that's being applied to you. So the Westboro Baptist Church guys are like, look at this fucking clown. No, what a sad day in America when I have to say the Westboro Baptist Church is right. You are a fucking hypocrite, Kim Davis. You are a hypocrite. But now I'm going to go another level deeper. This is inception here. The Westboro Baptist Church, you're also fucking hypocrites. Spare me. Nobody can follow the Bible to a T because it's incredibly contradictory. And on the few issues where it is not contradictory, the Westboro Baptist Church sucks balls, and you're religious hypocrites. For example, in the Bible, crystal clear, pro-immigration, pro-treating the other in a positive way. I've read you all the quotes in the Bible on immigration here. No two sides to that in the Bible, but you're against that. Treating the poor kindly. That's not debatable in the Bible. The message is straightforward on that issue. Do you guys do that? No, you don't. So you're also religious hypocrites. How about abortion? We've gone over the quotes in the Bible in detail on abortion. The Bible's actually pro-abortion. I won't bore you with the details again today, but there's multiple passages, including ones where God performs abortions and ones where he says, if your wife cheats on you, she should get an abortion. Are you pro-abortion, Westboro Baptist? I can't hear you. So you're all fucking hypocrites. And that's why, well, it's one of the many reasons why, we shouldn't base law and public policy on your bullshit religion. Because it's not true. We should base our public policy on rationality, reason, democracy, conversation, those wacky things. All right. And we're done, man. That was fun. This may be a record. I'm fucking 6 minutes early. Should I sing you guys songs for the next 6 minutes? I'm not going to do that, in case anybody was wondering. All right, so since I have some time here, let me lay out some stuff about the shirt drive. I don't know how many of you have already purchased it. I haven't looked at the thing in a day or two, but you already shattered whatever the original goal was, 50 shirts or something. We're well into the hundreds now. For those of you who haven't gotten a shirt, what's wrong with you? Go get a shirt. And the reason why is it goes to good causes. Not only that you'll get to rock a secular talk shirt, which is badass, but goes half the money goes to Lilith Penn, who does a lot of work for secular talk for free, and the other half the money goes towards Wolfpack, getting money out of politics, which is something that I think we all agree on and maybe the biggest issue because it's the issue that affects all other issues in politics. So if you haven't, check it out. Oh, and we also have international shipping, too, now. If you go, I think it's booster.com/secular talk international for international shipping, and booster.com/secular talk just for the regular shirts. And I put, if you go back and look at the older videos on this that I released, I put the link to everything in the video description box. Well, I just told you what the site is, but if you want to go to the old videos anyway, go right ahead. I told you my new goal was 250. We're probably going to pass that, I think, at least if the trends continue at about the same pace. But I know I want to get a Secular Talk hoodie. There's regular shirts, there's women's shirts, and there's hoodies. I like how regular and women's. No, men's and women's, not regular and women's. And I don't have a hoodie yet. I'm definitely going to get one of the hoodies because that's pretty badass to have a Secular Talk hoodie. And that's that. And, oh, yeah, I haven't plugged this in roughly 18 years, but use the Amazon link. So if you're a fan of the show and you like what we do here and you already buy shit on Amazon like crazy, you might as well use our Amazon link. And the way you access that is very easy. In any of the YouTube videos, you click to expand in the video description box, scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll see. It'll say Amazon link in all caps. That link, and then bookmark it. And then every time you shop on Amazon, what you'll end up doing is helping the show. It helps the show big time. I think we get 7% of between 5 and 7% of every purchase you make, and it doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you anything. And actually, I'm silly because I'm doing this conversation now not into the big microphone, and I should be speaking into the microphone because I need to post a segment on Amazon, on YouTube, about the Amazon thing. I haven't done it in forever, and that helps. It helps a lot. I guess I'll end up doing that official segment tomorrow, not right now because I just blew it. But, yep, that'll do it, guys. I love you to death. If you haven't, we did the Sam Harris interview on Friday. If you haven't seen that, go to the YouTube channel, and you'll see it. Listen to that interview, two-hour-long talk. A lot of different angles to that. I have many thoughts about it, but I'm not going to do an official follow-up because I didn't do an official follow-up to the Glenn one, and it'd only be fair if I did follow-ups to both of them because they fucking hate each other with a burning passion. But I will, I think next week I'll be having a conversation. The Amazing Atheist reached out to me on Twitter, and he wanted to talk about the same issue. We're going to talk about it next week at some point. He wants to bounce ideas off me about this whole debate. After that, hopefully I'm done with the debate because I'm so fucking tired of talking about new atheists versus progressives. But anyway, that's that. Love you guys. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Later. Mwah.